We have Jacob prophesying. He's telling his sons what's going to befall their descendants in the years to come, them and their descendants in the years to come. And in this verse 22, it says, Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. Now, where Jacob here is speaking, he's speaking both in past tense and in future tense, because wherever Joseph went in his life, it didn't matter whether it was out in the field or down in the dungeon or second in command in Egypt, he had a ministry. And a ministry that we believe affected very many people and brought great glory to the Lord. Where you read there, a fruitful bough, it means branch, but there's also another meaning to it. It can mean the son of a fruitful tree is Joseph. Again, if you looked at it in the original language, it reminds us of John 15. The Lord Jesus Christ is the branch, is a vine, and we are the branches. Now, you will always notice when you read about Joseph's life that what is known as his fruitfulness was not confined to what we would call good days. When the Lord was in a marked way with him and he was knowing great joy and everything seemed to be just as he would have it to be. There were times like that in his life, of course, but it wasn't always like that, far from it. But all of the time, his life had a ministry. He had a good love for his brothers. We mentioned that on the weekend. And his people, which he never lost over the years. And even though he became very, very wealthy and well off in Egypt, he never lost his love for his own people. And that says something about his character. A lot of people do. They just forget where they come from and they forget their own people. But Joseph was not that kind of man. It says here, the branch ran over the wall. If I can use an illustration, when I was at Annaghmore School, it's just in ruins now if you ever go around there, but when I was there, outside the window of the kitchen, there was a hedge and there was a pear tree and there was one big branch sticking out on the school side of the hedge. And some of the rest of the tree, as far as I can remember as a small boy, seemed to be dead. But on this particular year, when we went back to school in September, on this branch that always was sticking out, there was one massive big pear. And I would have loved it. And I'm not sure if anybody else knew it was there. I was too small and too young to climb the tree to get it. And I didn't want to tell any of the bigger boys in case I went up and got it and kept it for themselves. So it stayed there. But that was a branch that was sticking out over the hedge. And it was fruitful. And it is an illustration, really, of Joseph's life. And brothers and sisters, it's an illustration, too, of the life of the Christian church. We ought to love our own in our assembly. We ought to love them in the Lord. And when you hurt, I should hurt, and vice versa. And broadly speaking, other people you know who are believers as well, there should be that affinity between God's people, especially outside the camp, who love the Lord, and there should be that connection between them. But we should never be confined to within the wall. I'm thinking these days of all around us, when we're just glad, as we said, to be able to be back in church, to talk to you and speak to each other for a wee while and to have a word and just to go home again, or tonight to pray and then go home again. It's great to be able to do all of that, and we must do that and care and pray for each other. But we need to remember the other side of the wall. Because irrespective of how we view the sins of men, and we don't view them in a way that brings us any gladness, but they're all to be seen all around us. In spite of the lockdown, in spite of the hardship and all of that, the sin is to be seen on every hand. They're talking now about rising numbers of people infected, whether that is because there are more tests or because there are more infections, probably both. But there are groups of people who get together in hundreds and they're shoulder to shoulder and they're absolutely could not care for other people, and they're involved in their drinking And because if they cannot have clubs where there's dancing and all, you take a couple of hundred people squeezed into a house. And all of that kind of thing. But however we view that, brethren and sisters, we have to love that which is over the wall for the Lord. For the Lord. And looking tonight with you just for a while now, you'll be glad to hear that I've got a battery in my watch. Hasn't been working since before lockdown, and then I've been using other people's since that, but I got a battery in it, so there's no excuse for going on too long tonight. I want to look at running over the wall in difficult days. These are difficult days. I want you to notice, first of all, the role of compassion. It would be very, very easy for Joseph to have been a man who centered all that he was and all that he got and all that he all his thinking, to center it all upon, if not himself directly, certainly upon, as I mentioned earlier, those that were dearest to him and people that he loved, his own family. And to think, well, I'm just going to look after my own, and that is all that I'm going to do. And maybe be conscious that there are other people there in very great need, but to care really very little for them. And if I read to you what it says over there in the book of Matthew, and chapter 25, there is thought here of the man who's been given the talent. I'm not going to read all the verses, but the master now has returned, and he's requiring of these men what they did with the talents. And if you look at verse 24, it says, "Then he which had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee that thou art a hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown." He's on the defensive right away. He's setting the story up here as if it was, oh, I respected you so much and I knew that you were a fierce man if anybody offended you. He simply is making an excuse. We'll read on here and see what it says. "Thou reapest where, reaping where thou hast not sown and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that is thine. His Lord answered and said unto him, Thou wicked and unslothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I sowed not, and gathered where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury." Please look at verse 26, where it simply says, "Thou wicked and unslothful servant." The Lord of the house, the master here, is not at all impressed by the attitude of the man who is saying, "Now, I did it all to please you." He should have taken that one talent and done something with it. You'll note here that he does acknowledge when he, in verse 25, he said, "And I was afraid and went and hid thy talent." He had it. But those were the Lord's ultimately. And the Lord had given it to him, and he did nothing with it. And folks, the Lord has given lots of talent to his church. Some people preach. Some people across the world preach with extreme ability. Other people preach. Some people are absolutely great at on the doors or witnessing to people. Some people, in their own quiet way, among their loved ones or friends, are able, whenever is right, they're able to get that wee word in that can make the difference. Some people are great encouragers. Some people are very, very kind, and that can make the total difference in people's lives. I remember a man telling one time of how he was so much in despair. I'll not tell you what he was going to do, but he was fed up, let's put it like that, you know what I mean. And then he heard this man's voice. And the man was just coming to talk to him, ordinary. And he told the man, he said, "That day just hearing your voice saved me. That made the difference. You have a talent. I don't know what everybody's talent is, but ultimately any talent we have is from the Lord, it's his. And we don't take it and hide it in the earth." And Joseph here, he was not going to be parochial. He had compassion. Yes, he had compassion that was, you could say it was relatively easy. Among his own folk, he loved his brethren, his brothers. And you love your family, and I trust you love your brothers and sisters here in the Lord. But when it comes to outside people, maybe those who are nasty, enough regarding Christian things. Maybe someone will even speak to you. And that kind of thing. Easy to harden up and think, well, I'm looking after my own, which we must do. We must do that. But there is to be the role of compassion. That is what the church does. It reaches out. And in these difficult days, folks, wherever you are and wherever I am, we can ask the Lord to help us to be that branch. Do you remember the branch I mentioned with the big pear on? I can still see it. It was in behind the leaves. And Mrs. Loney and Mrs. Beattie were working in the kitchen. And I was going to tell them about it, but I was afraid of them telling the other boys too. And then the other boys climbing up and getting it and me not getting it. So I think it stayed there. It had rotted, or the wasps ate it. I'm not sure. But I never got it. But it was very visible. And that branch had come out over the hedge. And folks, whenever there is that compassion, what there has to be. That is why we continue to think on about other meetings and days ahead. And we continue to hope that the day will come in God's time when we'll be able to do the things that we used to do. But in the meantime, God's work goes on as far as compassion for the lost and love for the lost. Why? Well, that's a big part of the reason why you're here to pray tonight. To pray for those who are lost. It's a role of compassion when we think of the branch going over the wall in difficult days. But there's also the resisting of comfort. Comfort has its place. It's very nice to have a time of comfort. Maybe a few days away somewhere, or even a day, and you can get away there. I have already lined up a place for Charith to go for a day with me, to make a nice lunch and put it in a backpack, and I'll even give her the privilege of carrying the backpack if she wants. And she can come, and there's a lovely 11-kilometre walk. I will either go with her or keep in contact by mobile when she's on her way around. I'm not sure. I'm only joking, of course. But, you know, it's away in the wilderness, the place I'm thinking of. And there's something very, very comforting about that, just getting away like that. And please don't think upon me as being harsh or anything and saying you should never have comfort. Of course you should, but our lives are not all about comfort. And when you want to do something for the Lord, more often than not, it means resisting comfort. Poor Jonah, we always use him as the example. He loved the comfort of not being near the Ninevites. They hated him and he hated them. And he fought tooth and nail in his own mind before the Lord took a dealing with him in such a way that eventually he went to the Ninevites, and even when the Lord had compassion on them, there was still a bit of bitterness in his heart. He loved comfort. He loved being away from that which was a little bit difficult. Comfort is good in this place, but don't let it destroy our zeal. Don't let it destroy our zeal for the Lord. You think of the book of Haggai. I was reading there fairly recently. I'm sure you've read it many a time. It's a lovely passage there where it says in verse 1 in the book of Haggai, it says, "Then spake Haggai, the Lord's messenger, and the Lord's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Lord." And the Lord says that to people, it makes a huge difference. I am with you. And I just want to say, it's lovely to see you young people here tonight. And some of you will be starting school and university again very shortly. Remember this, young Christian, the Lord's with you. He is with you just as he was with them. And he came and he blessed them in a way that he stirred up their hearts and he roused them to action there in verse 14, as you see there. And look at the lovely words in verse 5. See what it says there? My spirit remaineth among you. What better thing can be said of any people or any house or any person? My spirit remaineth among you. Fear ye not. And you and I, when we have the Spirit remaining among us, we can take comfort sometimes and set it a wee bit to one side and do the Lord's bidding. That is why almost everything you go to do, and all of you know about this, anything you go to do, whether it is a manual work around the church here, which is very important too, painting the fence, washing the curbs with the power hose, witnessing, doing all the other things in church. There's a little bit of stress involved in it in some way, or putting yourself out a little bit. And that means you could be sitting at home watching a movie or doing something else. There's nothing wrong with that. But the things need to be done. And therefore, we need to remember Joseph. Joseph was in a position where he could have a great comfort. Not all the time, but some of the time. And he was able to resist that comfort. And he was able to look beyond himself and to go out and to do what he could for the Lord. I trust the Lord will help us here, as he did with Haggai, as he did with the Apostle Paul, as he did with Joseph, as he did eventually. Even with Jonah, managed, even though he complained a lot, he managed to get away outside himself there. There was here the resisting of comfort, but we'll have another wee look here at Joseph where it says that the branches went out over the wall. There was the realizing of corrupt hearts. Joseph was God's man. And many of the places he went, now you know the story of Joseph, and many of the places that he went, there were those who had corrupt hearts. They were lost. And therefore the action that they were involved in came from the sin that was within their heart. Now he needed to remember that God loved the sinner while God hated the sin, because if that was not the case, he would have turned his back on them. He would have turned his back on them. And folks, whether it was down in the dungeon with, yes, this one man remembered him eventually. And then there was Potiphar's wife. And then there was his brothers and all of these people who should have, well, I can't see any reason how they shouldn't have loved him and cared about him and respected him, because it seems that that is the way he looked upon them. But he realized that men had corrupt hearts. And you know, folks, if we can get there, we hate the sin, as I said, and we sometimes come to a stumbling block when it comes to, when it comes to someone rejecting our message. Now remember Joseph here, we're talking about, he was a salesman, you could say that. He was a political leader, he was a Christian worker, and none of them. Like he managed, how any man got from where he was to the position he was in Egypt, we read the other day, it was of God. God did it. And folks, he can do wonderful things for you. And again, young people, you don't know what the Lord can do with you in your life. It's great to have that ambition, and if you know what you want to do as regards career or whatever, that's a great thing. But every day you keep looking to the Lord, and who knows what he could do with you. But a young fella, with a young fella or a young woman. And by seeing men's hearts for what they were, the branches still went over the wall. When you look at the passage where he was reunited with his brothers, they had schemed and lied and resented him and their father who loved them dearly. They lied to him all their days. And their hearts were corrupt. And yet Joseph, he was able to show kindness to them. I'm sure all of us tonight can think of family members, people we're related to, and they have no time for the gospel. I've asked you before, I was thinking about him today again. I think about him most days, every day. My Uncle Sam, you might pray for him. His health is deteriorating now. He's on the select vestry in his church, but that means nothing. That's all. He's on, I'm just going to count the game and make sure. I had 7 uncles, and when I got saved, they were all alive. And now 6 of them are dead. And there's one of them, I believe, he made a profession the day he died, and the other one said something. But out of those 6 that have passed away, can I guarantee at all that any of them are converted? And I prayed for them when I got saved. No. 6 out of 7. 1 left, and he's not saved either. Maybe you pray for him. Sam is his name. But brethren and sisters, it's such a vital thing. As the years slip by, and they slip away, we need to see men and women saved. Yes, we know about the resentment for the gospel and the things that they say and the corruptness of their hearts. But may the branch go out over the wall, and the branch of our love for their souls and our desire to see them won to the Lord Jesus Christ. Unbelief is a big barrier for us all. And I trust that even during these times when it's difficult to be able to do everything you want to do, that we will not be caught up in unbelief or self-doubt, but that we cast ourselves upon the Lord every day. That we continually look to him for help and trust in him to do his work, even through the opportunities that he gives to us.